Hey, this is Harlem, and this is the Fresh Ubuntu Podcast. Thank you for joining us. This week, we just have just news. We're getting caught up on a bunch of things, and it's going to be a kind of a hectic holiday season. It's coming upon us. Thanksgiving is, of course, next week, or by the time you get this podcast, it might be Tuesday of the week of Thanksgiving. So, anywho, thank you for downloading the podcast, listening to it. Appreciate all the great feedback about last week's show, and I'll get to that in the emails at the end. So enjoy the show. We have a guest as well today helping us out with the news, along with Peter, myself. We also have Nightwise, the host of the Nightcast. Nightwise is based in Belgium. He has a great podcast, by the way. Wonderful podcast. Unfortunately, I haven't had much time to listen to podcasts, any podcast, really, in the past 2 or 3 months. I have just been way, way too busy. You know, summer is just getting over. Kids are going back to school. You know, I'm just getting rolling up the podcast once again and just sort of settling into a routine now. So I will be listening to more and more podcasts as time progresses. I did happen to listen to Linux Reality, Chess Griffin's review of Gutsy Gibbon, and also the last episode of a lot of Linux Links podcast with David Yates. Anyway, just wanted to mention those two. Let me see. So that's going to be it for the intro, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast. Again, they're all getting to be very long nowadays, so I'm not even going to mention any more. Just, I guess, as a rule, they're going to be about 40 minutes to over a little over an hour long. You know, not much I can do about it. We just have a lot of content and a lot of things to say. So without further ado, we'll head straight into the news segment after this short pause. Welcome to the Fresh Ubuntu Podcast. This is episode, I kind of lost track what episode number it is. But anyway, this is the Fresh Ubuntu Podcast about all things Ubuntu. Thank you for joining us. We have another special guest today.
Yep, I'm the host of Nightwise.com and The Nightcast.
That's right.
Nightwise.com being the website, The Nightcast being the podcast about life on the edge of real and cyberspace.
And welcome to the show, Nightwise.
It's a real honor.
Yes, and it has been lately, hasn't it, huh? We had Chess on here the other day, and David, and Jason, and we're getting all the big shots in here. But
all Xcasters are coming to join us, you know?
That's right. This seems to be the hot spot.
You should charge beer. I mean, you'd make some money. Charge for drinks.
Exactly.
Make money.
We'll hire a bartender, and then we'll get that all started.
There you go.
So, Peter, today we are going to do a little bit of the news and other things. Nightwise is here to join us to add his 2 cents worth in there. But first, I would like to congratulate the folks over at the Ubuntu OS podcast. They seem to be the sort of like the granddaddy of Ubuntu podcasts. They just reached their 50th episode, and congratulations to them. And
you're here.
They have come a long way, and hope to get more out of them in the near future. So anyway, Peter, you have news for us, and why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Man, we have so much news, it's not funny. I don't even know where to start, but I guess I will. I'll pick a random spot. Following up on our previous topics, we covered a couple of weeks ago the Walmart $200 PC featuring the GOS, the conceptual Google OS. Initial reviews of this seem to be really positive. Harlem, I got about, I don't know, 6 or 7 news articles on this alone. And I'm downloading a copy of it myself as we speak because I really am curious to check out this Ubuntu respin with the Enlightenment E17 desktop. Anyway, as we covered, I think it was 2 weeks ago, computer is selling for $200. You know, it's got modest hardware specs. It's not some massive gaming machine or anything. Seems to be pretty popular. It got rave reviews on Walmart.com, where it's being sold. And allegedly, Walmart completely sold out of their inventory on this box. Now, I don't have any numbers. I don't know like how many they had in stock from the beginning. I'm assuming it's more than 10. But anyway, regardless, they have sold out of their inventory, which I'm sure means that there are going to be more. So Linux is seeing some adoption, which is pretty cool. And I thought this was kind of neat because there was an interview with the president of the company. I forget his name now, but it's in the link. It's going to be in our show notes. He says that he liked Ubuntu because of its philosophy of Linux for human beings, and he wanted to extend it. So he wanted to extend it to Linux for human beings who shop at Walmart.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, it's funny that you kicked off with that story because all afternoon I've been looking at GOS at work, trying to do some research on it, actually writing an article on it. I think the GOS isn't what we call YAUD, Y-A-U-D, yet another Ubuntu distro. It's actually, I would call it a love child between the Web 2.0, the open source community, and something that is accessible to the end user. Because, I mean, if you think about it, dish out a standard distro of Ubuntu to just about any newbie, and he'll freak out. But this is actually the same thing, but nicely packaged and integrated with the web, with stuff that people know. I mean, they know Google, and they know Google Earth, and this and that. And they actually combined all of these things together, making an OS that not only is very light and cool and fresh to the eye and the processor, as I might say, but is also something that is very recognizable to the end user. And this might just be an attempt at striking a mainstream key and offering a computer with an operating system that's for free on a ridiculously low price. All of that taken into account, it's a great operating system.
Thank you for that. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I've always wanted to try E17. I actually installed E16 a while back. Couldn't really get it to work under Ubuntu, but eager to try this GOS. This, I think, is what Microsoft was afraid of. This is where the software side integrates with the web. You've got a cheap architecture, free operating system. You know, the world is at your fingertips for $200, you know, or slightly less than $200.
If I just count out these $200 to euros, it's a ridiculous price for a computer. I mean, it's like 150 euros, which is, let's see what where I can, well, you can buy a jacket for 150 euros, just to give you a price comparison.
Wow, amazing.
It's a cool jacket for 150 euros, but sure. Hey, a computer, it's about, that's really cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing that is, however, true is that if you unplug this box from the net, it's a paperweight. But if you take a look at what the average Joe does online, and you just take a look at the bottom bar of GOS, and you go like, what does the average Joe do? He surfs, he does some word processing, he does some typing, he goes to YouTube, he blogs a bit, and then if you just list up the main topics of what the average user does online, you can just tick them off one by one from the start bar, and it offers people a perfect operating system.
Exactly.
To the average user.
Exactly, and that's why I was saying this is the thing that Microsoft was afraid of, I think.
So. Yeah, and by the way, I thought that that E17 was a boy band.
It might still be. It might be a Japanese boy band.
Oh yeah, E17. Okay. We got a computer with
anyway.
E17. That's so 90s, man.
Moving swiftly on, we also have another story. A week or two ago, Asus released the EEE PC, and this is an extremely affordable notebook computer. It is not running Ubuntu. It's running a custom distribution of Zandros-based Linux, but you can bet that people are going to have Ubuntu running on this thing in no time at all. This is a bit of a different approach. The big thing with this is it's got a 900 megahertz Intel mobile Celeron processor. It's got an Intel GMA graphics card. It only has a 7-inch widescreen display, which is a little small. But the overall thing about this thing is it's really lightweight. It weighs about 2 pounds, and that's 2 pounds, kilograms, nightwise. What's the conversion there?
2 pounds is 1 kilogram. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's right. I thought it was about one.
That's the weight of an average puppy.
It's a puppy. That's a small puppy. That's a really tiny puppy.
It's like a midget chihuahua.
Anyway, this machine has no hard drive, no moving hard drive inside. Instead, they come in a couple of models with a 4 gigabyte or 8 gigabytes of flash storage and 0.5 gig of memory. It's got a wireless card in it, and it has wired Ethernet. Now, this is obviously, you know... Yeah, it's like a PDA, only it has a keyboard. It's bigger. It's got It's about 8.5-9 inches wide or so. So it's smaller than your average. It's like a sub-notebook. It sounds really cool. And it's going for $300. So if you want something for, you know, no moving parts, that's going to be, you know, somewhat more like a traditional PC, this is a pretty good option. I'm really curious to see how this thing. I mean, the display sounds a little bit small. You know, the screen resolution is only 800 pixels by 480 pixels, which is a little odd. It's a widescreen display. One thing I saw in a review was that that same resolution is what you get on a Nokia N800 or an N810, which is a little handheld. So the folks over at Ars Technica were wondering, you know, they seem to think that the screen resolution is a little low because you can get a handheld device with the same res. But anyway, definitely worth looking at. It comes with Linux, and again, like I said, I'm sure that someone is going to be, you know, hacking this thing to run Ubuntu on it. And if, you know, 4 or 8 gigs of storage isn't enough for you, then, you know, you've got plenty of USB ports on the thing, so you can always, you know, add external storage to it. So seems pretty cool.
It's the ultimate PDA in the sense that there are no moving parts, plenty of storage. The screen may be small, but it's about the same size as a Libretto, a Toshiba Libretto, if you remember.
That's exactly what I thought of when I saw this thing, was a Toshiba Libretto running Windows 95 back in the day.
It has no moving parts. It's like battery friendly.
Yep, yep.
I mean, forget the OLPC project. I want one of these.
Turns on instantaneously. You know, all the flash.
Yeah, instant
is,
on.
It's beautiful.
Yep. It looks pretty cool.
I think we should call it the OLPG project. One laptop per geek or something.
Well, Nightwise, that was actually a brilliant segue because my next article is about the OLPC. And basically that is just to say that the Give One, Get One project has started. It started 3 days ago on November 12th. Just a reminder, it's only running for 15 days, so that if you are thinking about doing the OLPC, the Give One, Get One project is basically you donate $399 U.S., to the project, you receive one of the OLPC laptops and a needy child in a developing nation gets one as well. We've talked about the OLPC before on this. It's running a Red Hat derivative, I believe. Again, not Ubuntu, but it's a noble, you know, cause. It's a good Linux deployment, I think. And it definitely deserves to be looked at. It's not the same. There are a lot of specializations done on the OLPC, but it has some really cool technology. And again, the project, I think, does fit in with the Ubuntu philosophy in many ways. You know, it is all about helping folks, and you know, especially in developing nations. So don't write it off completely until you've looked at it a little bit. And but then if you decide that you have to buy an Asus EEE PC, I won't hold it against you.
That's the only choice I have. I can't order it because it's only for U.S. and Canadian residents.
In that case, get that OLPC and let me know how your Ubuntu install goes on it.
I'm going to get the Asus, yeah, because I can't get the OLPC. Too bad.
Yeah, that is too bad. I wonder if that'll change over time. I have to think that if this Give One, Get One program is successful, that they're going to extend it and do it again, but I don't really know.
I wonder if we can buy one for us and then give one to Nightwise.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Going like, Belgium is a kind of a third world country.
Right.
Well, it's not a country at the moment, but if our government keeps this up, we will be a third world country
right.
In the moment.
Boy, if I made statements like that. Anyway. All right, moving on. Let's see, what do we want to talk about next? Big news again in the Linux community. Again, not necessarily directly related to Ubuntu, but Google has finally come out and announced what their G Phone is going to be. I'm not going to beat this one to death because I'm sure that by now, unless you've been living in a cave, you know that the project is called Android. It is not actually a phone. It's a phone specification, but it's going to be built on open standards. It's going to be built on Linux, and it's going to be open and just, you know, open in general, and I think that's great. Again, there are competing projects to this, other Linux-based mobile phone platforms. Specifically, the one that comes to mind is OpenMoco. I do not yet have enough information to make a decision as to like which one I would buy at this point if they were offered. But if you want to compare these to the iPhone, for instance, Google has announced a project. They have made their SDK, their software development kit, for Android available. So you can start downloading and download the SDK and start developing third-party apps for it right now. And unlike Apple, they're not going to go out of their way to brick your phone that has third-party apps on it. So keep that in mind when you're considering a new phone, specifically a new iPhone.
I wonder how much of this was a direct result of the iPhone bricking incident. Was this brought about by that, or is this an extension or a reaction by the Google and open source community?
I don't think so, just because that there have been talks about the Google phone for so long right now that I have to think that this, you know, these talks have been going on for quite a while. Yeah. But, it's hard to say. I mean, they may be, I'm sure that, that Apple, bricking folks' iPhones and having such a, belligerent response to third-party apps, I'm sure that, that added some fuel to Google's fire to get this thing out there. Anyway, and we'll have a bunch of links in the show notes for that. The BBC in the UK admits that they massively underestimated the number of Linux users on their site. Now, I know this was a big thing. I think it was towards the end of last season of Lug Radio. The guys over there, the boys in Britain, were talking about how the BBC was going to broadcast all of their internet content only in Windows media format. So basically you had to have Windows to watch their content. And I forget the exact numbers, but the BBC was saying that, it's like a tiny little amount, less than a couple of percent of their users were using Linux, and therefore they weren't going to cater to the Linux market. Apparently they got a huge backlash from this, and I forget, I think they had something in like the hundreds of thousands of people complained about their decision to not support Linux. And as a result, they are revisiting this this policy. Oh yes, I just found the thing. Apparently, the BBC claimed that they had somewhere between 400 and 600 Linux users every week on their website, and it turns out that that number is actually closer to 97,600. So they thought that they had about 400; they really had about 100,000. And as a result, they're not going to support that.
They're not?
They are now. Sorry, going to support. Yeah, they're working on it. And
The thing that they probably underestimated was they probably looked at the number of people who had a Windows computer and the number of people who had a Linux computer, but they didn't take into account the number of people who were smart enough to surf to the BBC website and get content there. So the number of Linux users that were smart enough to do that was actually higher.
You bring up a good point, actually. There are other websites that do this too that I am very annoyed at. Netflix here in the States, they won't let you do the watch it now option. You have to have either a Windows XP machine with Service Pack 2 or an OS 10 with the I think Leopard or at least the one before Leopard, anyway.
Mm-hmm. But Tiger.
Yeah, Tiger. But you can't do it on Linux. You can, you can have Firefox. Oh, and that's another thing. You have to use Internet Explorer 6 or 7 and above.
That's probably because the back end is programmed in .NET and stuff, and it's not compatible. We have some banks over here that do that, and it's a real, real pain to have sites that are still like that. I think that you could call that is something that is so late 90s, having sites that are optimized for Internet Explorer or stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely going, using proprietary technologies that are, only on one platform. I didn't think it was a great idea back in the day when everybody said, this site works best with Netscape, and I don't think it's a good idea when people do it now when they say, designed for IE. Or worse off, when they don't say anything and just, you go there with Firefox and your page just doesn't load for whatever reason. I don't know if anybody, we have a bunch of Mac users who listen to the podcast, I know. And one thing I hear from some of my Mac power user friends is I'm hearing about this great application launcher called Quicksilver. And I know that Merlin Mann over at 43 Folders and Twit and some of the other Twit podcasts, he's a massive, Quicksilver user. And this is one of those killer apps where people have said that, you know, like, oh, you know, you've got desktop panel replacements and GNOME launchers, but none of them could do the things that Quicksilver can do. Well, news is that Quicksilver is going open source. The unofficial Apple weblog reported this 6 days ago, so late last week, that Quicksilver is going open source, and that means that I bet you we will see Quicksilver for GNOME and KDE sometime soon. I personally haven't used it. I've seen it in use. It looks pretty cool. But, you know, if it's that cool, I'm sure that someone is going to snap this up and, you know, it'll be available for Linux users soon. It is being released. The source code is being released as a Google code project. So anybody who's interested can go over and get the code. And if there are any developers out there, please do that. Make a GNOME version. Let us know if it's any good. We want to try this thing.
I talked to Annie McCaskey a few weeks ago about Quicksilver. And the one thing he said is, like, you need to dig through a half an encyclopedia to get to all the ins and outs of Quicksilver that will actually increase your productivity. So the only thing that I find slightly ironic about Quicksilver is, like, yeah, it's great. It will get you to do things in half the time that you do them otherwise, but it will take you the other half to just read the manual and find all these fancy keys and remember them.
That I have to agree with that. There are many times whenever I see some kind of new tool or, you know, user interface or any sort of new paradigm for productivity, I always have to stop and think, you know, is this going to take me more time to learn how to use this than it does, you know, using my traditional methods already? And I don't know. Like I said, I know, you know, I've seen some demos where you can do some really cool stuff, but I don't really know what level of skill you need to have with Quicksilver to become more productive, or if it's, you know, worth making that leap. So definitely raise a good point. So next story. We've previously covered this about how the open document format standards war was going and how Microsoft was trying to basically get their OpenXML to be drafted as the ISO open document standard. Unfortunately, it looks like this debate has hit a little bit of a bump in the road. We've got a couple of articles from last week on this. Basically, the World Wide Web Consortium, the WC3, has decided that it is... Basically, things are falling apart. Let me just put it that way. From what I heard, a couple of different reviews said that the WC3 thought that the open document format was really just becoming a self-promoting tool for OpenOffice. And I heard one correspondent say that it was effectively no different than Microsoft putting their own format forward, basically saying they want their document format to be dominant so that people will use Microsoft Word, and the open document format folks are arguing that they want theirs to be dominant so that OpenOffice will be the dominant, you know, document generation program. I'm really not sure that I agree with that take. If you're interested in that, we've got a couple more links and follow-ups. I'm sure we haven't heard the end of this debate, but it's just something that I wanted to bring up.
I would like to point out the term and explain the term competition. Yes, it's a competition is between two parties who each vote, support, and vouch for, guess what, their own product. It would be bad if OpenOffice would be supporting the Microsoft standard and the other way around. I mean, there's no surprise there. Of course the OpenOffice standard is something that is promoted by OpenOffice, and they actually invented the whole thing.
Right.
And now, if Microsoft does it, there's not a problem, but if somebody else does it, it's suddenly biased.
Yeah, I have to agree, but I would like to see anybody but Microsoft in charge of these open standards. That's how I'll leave it at that.
Well, here in Europe, we're fighting the good fight, though.
That's right.
We're kind of winning against the whole Microsoft debacle.
Taking them to court and suing them for billions of dollars left and right and stuff, that's awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, what are billions of dollars to Microsoft? I mean, it's like, it's just money.
Even if you're Microsoft, I think billions of dollars are still billions of dollars.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, we've got a few more. Harlem predicted that you know, in the weeks coming up to right up before Gutsy Gibbons' release and immediately after, things were going to be quiet. And then afterwards, we would see a bunch of reviews. We have a bunch of different blog posts and reviews of Gutsy Gibbons. All of them are very favorable. I'm not saying that, you know, they're all saying, hey, jump off of Windows right now. But a lot of these good reviews are out, and we're giving you some links in the show notes so you can go check them out. But, you know, don't take our word for it that Gutsy rocks. Check out other people who are saying it, too. Yeah.
Better than Vista, I think, but it's brown.
Yeah.
Still brown.
And we went over that, too. It's still brown.
I mean, yep. you guys don't like brown. I come from the land of chocolate, and you don't like brown.
that is the only thing. That's what I've been saying, is the only way that I have to, you know, I can reconcile the brown color is that I have to think of it as chocolate, and then it's not so bad.
Yeah. There you go.
On that note, Harlem, I'll talk a little bit about this now, related again to Ubuntu. Ubuntu is the primary, you know, the predominant Debian-based distribution these days. It's the most popular. For me, Linux has always been kind of two choices, either a Debian apt-get depackage-based distribution or a Red Hat RPM-based distribution. And I know there are others. I'm just saying for me that it's always been one or the other, you know. So Gentoo folks who like to build, you know, your own stuff, Linux from scratch folks, Slackware folks, sorry, I'm not trying to shut you out. I'm just saying my experience has generally been one of the two. And Red Hat based distribution, the predominant one now, the open source and community maintained version is Fedora. And Fedora version 8 was released last week. And I was pretty sick last week. I was kind of sick. I was on a lot of cold meds. It was late at night, so I was tired. And I have to think that combination of factors is what compelled me to download a copy of Fedora. Because I had previously vowed that I was never going to do that again because of something called RPM hell. And if you have any long-time experience with Fedora and you don't like it for whatever reason, chances are RPM and the package manager is why you may have some distaste for it.
Hey,
and I'm
hello.
No exception.
This package is dependent to some package that is located at the end of the universe. Please go and collect that, come back, and then you can install this. Kind of like that, right?
Oh, by the way, that dependency won't install on your system anymore, so you're going to have to download that and compile it from source. Goodbye.
Yeah, and the source code is actually hosted in a parallel universe three black holes away. And there you go.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that I'm not the only one who feels that way. I was afraid I was getting on my soapbox all alone there.
You know what that is?
Oh, boy.
Red Hat is like going into a Lamborghini garage, having the money to buy the Lamborghini Testarossa or whatever, and just coming up short 3 cents. And having no idea where the hell you're going to get the 3 cents.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, anyway, I did download Fedora. It used to be Fedora Core and Extras, and that's roughly analogous to Ubuntu and the Ubuntu Universe and Multiverse repositories. But anyway, right now it's all just Fedora. I did download it to see what it was like. I burned it onto a live CD. I was unable to get it to install under my VMware images, but I had a spare laptop. And I decided, what the heck, I'm going to put it on there. And I blogged about it. I blogged on my initial installation. Basically, I called it Fiddling with Fedora First Impressions. And my plan was to do maybe a three-part review of it, part one being the installation, part two being the configuration and setup, and part three actually using it as my main Linux OS for a little while. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that I'm going to get past part one. Installation. I did the installation.
Yeah.
Yep, I did that. And on my Dell laptop, I started to try to get to get on my wireless network, and it didn't work. And it harkened back to earlier Ubuntu releases where they did not come with support for the Broadcom wireless chipset. And, you know, trying to give it a fair shake, I said, well, you know, I had these problems back with Ubuntu, and I remember the days with Dapper Drake where I sat in my living room with a 20-foot Ethernet cable plugged into my hub so that I could sit with my family yet still fiddle with my computer while I wrestled with wireless. And, you know, the process got a little bit easier in Edgy, and then it got a lot easier in Feisty, and then finally with Gutsy, it's just like, oh, you've got a Broadcom wireless card, here's the restricted drivers in use, boom, you're online. My experience with Fedora is that they're still a few steps behind, and it's largely a manual process of obtaining the firmware, downloading it, using something like FWCutter to cut the firmware out of your Windows drivers and put it on. And, you know, frankly, this just underscored how important good hardware detection and support is. Because, you know, I like tinkering with things, but when I have the option of a Linux distro that's going to just work and recognize all my hardware and just work for me, I lose interest in the alternatives. And I was really, you know, I wanted to play around with Fedora a bit, but I just, that really turned me off to it. So, you know, call me lazy. I call myself lazy. But I just don't want to, you know, to fiddle with it that much anymore.
Oh, no, it's really that thing. I mean, if it works out of the box, it's fine. If it doesn't work out of the box, well, go hire a nuclear physicist and compile from code.
Right.
I mean, I always take the option from, if, A, you do not have a girlfriend, have plenty of time, have no social life, and have nothing to do whatsoever, please go ahead and download Disk Restribution, cut the .ini files from your Windows directory, surf half the internet, compile it from source, and pray that it works. Or B, if you are married, have a spouse, male, female, or whatever, go for the other option where that just works.
And, yeah, I'm married, I've got a stepson, I've got my own business, and I have precious few free hours in the day, so that's why I stuck with Ubuntu.
All the Linux geeks are going to hate me right now.
I know. I'm sorry. But we are hiring, so at least maybe I could give someone a job. Anyway, I did actually install Fedora onto my HP desktop, and that one had always worked with earlier Ubuntu distros. It's got the Intel wireless chipset, and the hardware detection has always been better on that than with Broadcom. However, I had problems getting that to recognize my wireless networks as well. And I have an older wireless network with web encryption, and I have a newer one with WPA, and I couldn't get it to join either one. So I did end up installing a copy and keeping it on one of my desktop PCs. The newest PC I have, it's about 6 months old, and it now dual boots, so I can either run Fedora or Ubuntu on that. And what I did is, since I was drawn to Fedora by the eye candy, I do like the way it's laid out. I like the desktop theme. And also the GNOME manager, the GNOME system menus and, you know, all the menus in general are laid out differently than, like what a stock Debian or Ubuntu installation is. And I think some of the things make a little more sense. They have things grouped a little more logically. So I really wanted to fiddle around with it and, you know, give it a fair shake. The installation, if you want to read about my experience of it, it's all up on my blog, and we'll put a link in the show notes so you can check it out. I tried to be pretty objective. You know, there were times when I said, okay, I think Fedora, you know, you did better here. Ubuntu guys, take note. And then other times I said, you know, Ubuntu's got you beat hands down. You know, this is where Fedora could improve. So I'm not going to rant on that much longer. Anyway, just check out my blog if you're interested. And if anyone has a quick and dirty way to get the wireless working on an HP laptop with an Intel wireless or on a Dell laptop with a Broadcom, drop me an email, peteran@freshubuntu.org. I'd be curious to hear how you got that working.
Oh, by the way, Harlem, I think that the desktop effects that Peter saw in Fedora were actually the cause of having too much cough syrup and weren't actually wobbly windows at all.
I was going to say, his medication was probably, he probably took an extra dose of medication that night and then drinking.
Cool. I actually did. I will confess that I had a big hefty dose of NyQuil and some cough syrup with codeine on that. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. And I may have even had a beer that night.
Just as
well,
I thought.
So.
Yeah, you weren't watching Compass, you were watching codeine.
Yeah.
codeine fusion.
He was thinking he was the host of Dignation or something.
Yeah.
That must be it. That would have just been beer.
Right.
Anyway, okay, so What I did end up taking away from Fedora, I joked with my wife and I said, well, I took the best parts of Fedora out and put them onto my Ubuntu system. She said, what's that? I said, the desktop background.
Good.
It's not brown.
It's not brown.
It's not brown. I have to say that visually, it is more appealing. There were some other things though too. It may have been just me or maybe on the default theme, but the default Fedora theme looked a little crisper. I thought the fonts were a little more legible. They rendered better on the system. There are a lot of differences, a lot of similarities, but overall, you know, I think Fedora is a competent release. If you prefer RPMs to at, God help you, and download Fedora, and, you know, good luck.
Great.
So, wrapping it up, we're coming close. I think I've beaten most of the news to death. We have a lot of OS X related news that I think we're going to hold off for an upcoming podcast.
Right.
And I do want to mention that the latest episode of Linux Reality, which came out last week, episode 84, was Chess Griffin's own Gutsy Gibbon episode. And that came out right around the same time as our podcast roundtable, where we had Chess and David and Jason as guests. So I urge everybody to go check out Chess's podcast. If you don't already listen to Linux Reality, I think you should. It's a very good podcast, and I think it's probably the premier Linux podcast these days. So definitely worth a listen.
Besides this one, of course.
Exactly.
Well,
I was just gonna say.
Sorry, that goes without saying.
Right.
I'm sorry. Pointing out the obvious here.
So you about done with the news, Peter?
I think I am. And, I've done the news. I've done my Fedora rant. I think I'm good.
Okay. Well, hey, Nightwise, is there anything that you would like to say to our listeners? Maybe give your show a plug, too, and let us know what's happening on your side of the world.
Okay. For some shameless self-promotion, insert here.
Sure.
I am the host of the Nightcast. You can check it out at www.knighthtwinc.com. And it's a great podcast about life on the edge of cyberspace. And we talk about working with Linux, working with macOS, and working with Windows. The last show that I had were some interviews on the Gutsy Gibbon release party hosted here in Belgium, here in nearby Hasselt. So we talked to some people of the Belgian Ubuntu forums. And the next one will be about virtualization. So there's always something there. And for the girls, you can go over to the website and take a look at the pictures of my cute little puppy. So there you go.
So were you at the release party?
Yeah, I went over there. It was only a few blocks away, and I just, you know, popped by and had a talk with the people of the Belgian Ubuntu forums and of the local computer club that hosted the event. It was very, very cool to see. I mean, it was very nice. We got a great tour, and there are about three interviews in the podcast. On one on how to use Ubuntu as a live CD, one on the whole Ubuntu thing, about what's new in Gutsy Gibbon, sorry, and one about the Belgian or the local computer club called the Bitmapper. So it's pretty interesting.
Cool. Hey, now I used to listen to your podcast way back when. You had the even days were a bit odd, or the even numbered podcasts were a bit odd. Are you still doing that?
Yeah. From time to time, I just might do a wacky thing and just take people on a sound scene tour or do the crazy things. Because the feedback that I got in the old series was that the people liked the wacky episodes, where the even episodes would be the odd ones.
Right.
So it's kind of like that again. For the moment, we're doing the grid series about how to build a technological grid around your life to support it, and every now and then I just, you know, jump out of the techno hoop and do something completely ridiculous and creative, so just to keep everybody amused.
Very nice. Well, Peter, do you have any parting words?
The parting word for today was, and that's the way it is.
Walter Cronkite.
In the Ubuntu community, anyway.
Okay. So, yeah.
Gentlemen, I want to just say before I log off, it was a great honor to be on your show. I'm a true listener, and anybody who is an Ubuntu user should, well, if he's not looking or if he's not listening to Fresh Ubuntu, he is missing a few packages. So.
apt-get install
well,
Fresh Ubuntu.
Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right, K-Dub, thanks for joining us, and this was really quite a nice little coincidence, actually. So
yeah, it was cool. It was great to be here. I really thank you guys.
Thanks for joining us, and have a good. I think it might be evening over there right now, isn't it?
It's about 9 o'clock p.m. Okay. So I'm just gonna couch lounge a little bit and call it a night.
All right. Well, you have a nice evening with you and your wife, and we will talk with you again shortly, I guess.
Okay.
All right.
Peter, Harlan, see you guys.
Glad you could join us.
All right. Bye bye.
Take care.
Bye bye.
All right. Thanks, Nightwise, for joining us. And thank you, Peter, for all your work with the news. That's going to do it for this week's news segment. We thank you for joining us, and we hope to speak with you again soon. Coming up next, we have a listener who sent us a voicemail that we are going to play and talk about. So that'll be coming up in the next segment. And we also have, we might possibly have another Man Page Minute by Peter. I think he will be doing the find command. It'll be a series, because it's such a huge command to begin with. But anyway, we got that in the coming segments. So thank you for joining us for the news, and we'll be back shortly.
Man is born, man lives, man dies, and it's all vanity. And that's about the way it is at the merry-go-round. You get on. You go around.
Okay, we got this voicemail from my old podcasting buddy, Scott Wilsey, from formerly from, well, more podcasts than you could shake a stick at. He did a bunch. But then, you know, he had to go and become a father and still had that whole full-time job thing going on, and his time for podcasting kind of dwindled. So, unfortunately, the Mac New podcast went away. But, hey, as a result, you know, Fresh Ubuntu got a new co-host, so I'm not complaining. Anyway, we got this voicemail from Scott, and we're going to try, since it was a bit of a long one, it's a little longer than we generally prefer our voicemails to be, but we made an exception seeing how, like I said, he's my old partner in crime. We're going to play it in its entirety, but we're going to interrupt it a little bit, and that'll give us a chance to sort of respond to some of the things that Scott said. And what's really cool about it is that he can't edit out any of my responses this time. So basically, you know, I have carte blanche. I can say whatever I like, and if I want to make Scott look really dumb and belittle all of his Mac-loving opinions, I can do that now. Isn't that cool, huh?
Take that, Scott.
So, without further ado, here we go. That's a message from Scott.
Harlan and Peter. Scott here. Peter's old podcast mate from previous times, back before he was famous. First of all, the podcast is a lot better, and I like it a lot. I liked it back when it was just Harlan, but I think the combination of the two of you and the interaction, and then the different segments that you've added, it's great. I really like it. Now, you know that I'm primarily a Mac user.
I have to, Scott, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you there for just a second. He said that the podcast is a lot better. And I have to think, Harlan, don't you agree? I think that he means it's a lot better than when we were doing the Mac New podcast. I think that's what he means.
Oh, okay. I thought it was sort of a backhanded compliment to me. But either way, that...
I think he's complimenting you, too. That's okay.
Okay, that's good. Okay. I don't know. Mac New was a good podcast. I listened to it a couple of times, and you even had me on as a guest.
I guess you're right. It wasn't all bad.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll let Scott get back to the podcast again here.
Okay.
Sorry, Scott. Continue. You were saying?
And right now I'm running OS 10.5, which is Leopard, which just came out. I really don't have a Linux distro set up anywhere right now, but I'm certainly not foreign to the concept of running Linux. I've run several different distributions in the past, and I certainly think that it would be a huge improvement over anybody who's running Windows to go ahead and switch to Linux if they can, if that's an option for them.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Scott, I'm interrupting you again. I have to agree. Yeah, I think that if you have the option to switch to Linux, it would be a great thing to do. I have to update this, too. At this time, I know Scott said he didn't have a current copy of Linux, but he did post on Twitter that he is downloading a copy of Gutsy Gibbon, and he will be running it under his copy of Parallels. So that statement's a little bit dated. And anyway, we'll let him get back to this again.
and it's certainly a consideration. And I know, Peter, you were talking about someone that we helped on our podcast, finally convinced him to switch over to the Mac, and he bought a MacBook, and now you've got him running Linux on a Dell laptop of his, so that's awesome. I had a couple comments. Harlem, you mentioned that Adobe should make Flash open source. I think, and you made the comment that it's just a Flash viewer. I think the problem is that if they made Flash open technology, that would also enable people to write applications for creating Flash, not just viewing it. And then if that was the case, that would pretty much be giving away the keys of the kingdom, at least with their Flash, because they charge a lot of money for that application, for creating Flash media.
Sorry, Scott, I've got to stop you on that one. Harlem, did you want to chime in on that?
You know, and that is a good point that he brings up. But Scott, let's not forget that I see it like this. It's kind of analogous to the Adobe PDF reader and Adobe PDF, the software that makes the PDF files. And they certainly give away working copies of the PDF reader. And I don't see why they couldn't give away working copies.
The authoring tool.
Yeah, the Flash authoring tool. Is it the authoring tool or the driver that drives the authoring tool?
I would say both, I guess. I mean, because Ganache is an open source Flash implementation that lets you play it. And there are, you know, we'll put a link in the show notes, but there's a family of products out there called Swish, which are Flash authoring tools too.
Right.
So, you know, you don't need to go to Adobe Macromedia to make Flash stuff anymore. You know, just like with PDFs, you can write your own PDF docs.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think they've got much of a leg to stand on if they want to monopolize the creation of Flash animations as well as, you know, just the viewing them.
And you bring up a good point, Peter. Same thing with the PDF files. It's now become sort of a standard, a web standard. It's not as if, you know, Adobe PDF, the PDF file maker, doesn't have a monopoly anymore. It's sort of, you know, Microsoft has a PDF reader, or it has the ability to read PDF files. There are many open source PDF readers. And I guess that's what I'm getting at, is that I don't necessarily need to make the Flash content, but I would like the ability to natively, you know, view the Flash content.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's get back and see what else he has to say on the topic.
So I think that's possibly one of the reasons why you won't see that happen in the near future. And then, Peter, you were talking about it surprised you that the opening, the login sounds or the startup sounds in Ubuntu are WAV, but when you tried to play a WAV file, it told you MPlayer or whatever your default player was told you that you didn't have the codec installed. And I'm wondering if maybe the operating system doesn't just handle the WAV files itself, but when it comes to playing a file that you've received or file that you have somewhere in your file system, it doesn't do that because it's, you know, normally you have an application that handles that. So I'm wondering if maybe that's the difference, is that the operating system is not using the default player to play the startup sound, and it has the codec built in. It is weird, I grant you, but it's probably a matter of the OS versus the individual player that you're using for the file, whether or not the codec's installed.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. He may be right. There may be something, you know, hooked down into the GNOME desktop environment that allows it to play a wave, but for some reason the Evolution or Totem Media Player doesn't have it by default. So I'll give that point to Scott until he's proven otherwise.
And then Peter, I know you took issue. You posted a link to a blog post, and let's see if I can go back and find it. You posted on Twitter, yes, switching from OS 10 to Ubuntu, 10 things I missed. And one of the things was Quicksilver. Quicksilver is basically, it's kind of an application launcher, but it's also deeper than that. You can do things with files. You can, you can basically manipulate files and applications in a lot of ways. It's pretty powerful. And then it's also got an API so that you can script against it. Now, he was asking for what would be a Unix replacement to that, and one of the responses was Quicksilver, learn shell programming and never look back. In and of itself, that doesn't seem so bad, but I know I made the comment in Twitter regarding that Linux community, a lot of the people have a reputation for being a little bit techno-snobby in the sense that they always want people to do stuff the hard way. Is such and such an application available? No, but, you know, take Vim and write your own. Not everybody wants to do that. I mean, Ubuntu is being targeted towards people who want an alternative to Windows, but aren't necessarily programmers or don't have the time. Sometimes you just want to use the computer. So I think that comments like that kind of get irritating. They get old. And that's not just a Linux thing. That's a Unix thing in general. And right now, I lean primarily towards the Unix-type operating systems, you know, OS.
I have to interrupt Scott there for just a second. I completely agree with him on that point. The whole point of, just run it yourself. Well, that may work for hardcore hackers who, like Nightwise, would point out, say, have no life, no family, no job, an infinite amount of time to sit there and code up their stuff. But for the average user, that's not a really good answer. You know, if somebody says, hey, I want a program to do XYZ, and you come back and say, write your own, not really what they're looking for. And that actually, we started a little bit of a Twitter war back and forth on this, because my point to him was, I said, yeah, I think you're right. Some of the Linux users are, pretty snobby here. But, traditionally, I thought it was always the Macintosh users who were these smug, my system's better than your system kind of guys. So I got a kick out of that, and I'm not denying it. Comments like that, write your own or learn shell scripting or whatnot, that's not going to cause any sort of adoption in the mainstream. Harlem, you think that's the case?
He does have a point, and which is why I think, particularly Ubuntu, with the Ubuntu philosophy, is that it takes away the fear of plugging into the community without getting flamed, so to speak. And being new, I mean, how else are you going to attract people to your distro? You're going to want new users for your distro, and that one way to do it is just to be open and accepting of people's backgrounds and technical proficiency. And if one happens to be a newbie or new at it or unfamiliar with things, then, maybe that kind of user needs to be, have their hand held so that they could, become not an outspoken advocate of it, but a user and someone who will say to his buddy or his friend, yeah, I'm using Ubuntu, it's great. And the people in the forums are very helpful.
Yep, I have to agree. That really goes along with the Ubuntu philosophy a lot more than write it yourself. Yeah. Although, the whole teach a man how to fish kind of thing, sure. If you're going to teach someone how to program shell scripts and, replace Quicksilver with that, that's fine.
Yeah. Yep.
Let's hear what else Scott had to say.
OS 10 obviously is based on Unix. Linux is a Unix system, Unix-based system. So I think they are definitely the way to go, far superior to Windows. I think that type of attitude that came from the Unix community and got carried over into the Linux community, it just has to go. Get rid of it. You know what? If you really, you don't want Unix and or Linux to still just be used by people who are willing to create their own airplane just to fly. That old joke.
Right.
I think that kind of thing gets old. I'd like to see a little bit more openness in the with people with regard to questions. When people come and say, is there such and such that can do this? Or in this other operating system, I have a really wonderful application that does this, and it does extremely well, and it's really elegant. What replacement is there? And they're like, who needs that? We don't do that. We've never done that, and we're not going to start now.
I have to interrupt again, because Harlem, I think you and I had a very similar discussion when we were talking about the availability of Adobe applications versus alternatives and Wine and better Wine and Windows support. I think that Scott's right on the point there, and I think that he also if you look at the Ubuntu philosophy, I think that's more in line with what he's talking about. So,
the Ubuntu philosophy, if you want to read it, you can read it at we'll provide the link. It's at ubuntu.com/community/ubuntu-story/philosophy. And if you are at all hesitant to get on the forums or afraid of getting flamed, give it a try. Read the philosophy first, because I think you have to sign off on it before you become a member of the forum. But go ahead and try it, and you'll see it's a much different vibe in the forums. And I get on the forums every now and again just to see what issues are being handled right now, and believe me, there are, I will say this, there are a lot of inexperienced people getting on the forums and, you know, asking the same question over and over and over again, but they'll get a response, and it'll be a nice response. It won't be
RTFM.
Right.
It won't be RTFM.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It won't be like that. It'll be a really nice response. So.
Yeah, and again, we've had this discussion about, you know, like if someone says, you know, I want a personal finance manager and mine does this feature, right? Mine talks to my bank and lets me, you know, connect to my credit card and reconcile. What do we have on Linux that does this? And if someone says, well, we don't have one, but you don't need it because you can do X, Y, Z. You know, sometimes the workaround that is offered is not as easy or not as attractive for whatever reason as, you know, the application that exists in Windows or in Mac OS. And that's where I think, you know, we need to do some work to, you know, make native Linux apps supports better.
It is sort of getting a little more attention because you see that Wine is getting a lot of attention. They're coming out with releases or new releases or updates to their program every month or so. And so it's getting a lot of attention because there are, I believe, a lot of people who want applications that they can't get in Linux that they can port over or use with Wine. You know what I mean?
Yep, I agree. All right, let's hear what else Scott has to say. I think he's close to wrapping up now.
Well, I still see that there's a little bit of that attitude left in the Linux community, or at least with some of the Linux users. It just bugs me a little bit, so I just wanted to bring that up. I hope you understand what I'm saying, not knocking the Linux community, because I think that it's come a long way, and certainly podcasts like yours illustrate the fact that there's a lot of helpful and knowledgeable people in the community that are doing good things. So keep up the great work, guys. I really enjoy the podcast, even though I'm not really running Linux right now. I am going to install it in a virtual machine, though. I'm getting another backup hard drive, and I'm going to make a virtual machine under Parallels, which I've done before. I have run Ubuntu under Parallels before, and I'm going to do that again. And this time, I'll use the latest distro and the latest release of Ubuntu, I should say, and let's talk about how that goes, maybe. Take care, guys. I really like the podcast. Bye.
All right, so that was a little bit from my old, the former host of MacNew. I was the co-host, just to make sure my role was not overinflated. I was just the number two guy there. But thank you very much, Scott. We love getting feedback, even if it's from people we know. You know, that's just fine. We like getting feedback from people we don't know, too. That's already good. Harlan, do we have any rules of thumb or guidelines for folks who want to send us audio feedback?
Yeah, well, I would think that it would be nice if it were, oh, maybe anywhere between 3 to 4 minutes long. I like to get it in 24-bit format at 22050 sampling rate. And you can send it either as a WAV file, MP3, OGG file if you wish. It doesn't matter. We'll post the instructions on the site. And yeah, you can feel free to email it either to me at harlem@freshubuntu.org or to Peter at petern@freshubuntu.org, or the old email address, freshubuntu@gmail.com. You can email it there too. Yeah, thanks, Scott, for sending us that voicemail. It was very enlightening and educating, and look forward to having you on the podcast very soon, because I think Peter and I are going to want to do a little podcast about OS X Leopard and Ubuntu and do a side-by-side comparison.
Yep, and since I'm not currently running Leopard on my Mac, we are going to have to get someone like Scott to give us the Mac side of things.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, Scott. I apologize in advance for stepping all over you, but you had it coming, buddy.
All right, that is going to do it for this segment. And again, you can email us at freshubuntu@gmail.com, petern@freshubuntu.org, or harlem@freshubuntu.org. Or you can leave a comment on the show notes at freshubuntu.org. There you go. All right, and that's going to do it for this week's podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. I want to thank my guest, Nightwise of the Nightcast, nightwise.com, KNIGHTWISE.com. And he's got his podcast called Nightcast. And thank you very much for joining us. It was a pleasure having you on. He is in Belgium. I am in the west coast of the U.S. Peter is on the east coast of the U.S. We're sort of covering all the time zones in this last podcast. I'd like to get a few more. We need somebody from London, then maybe China or India or something like that. So anyway, blah, blah, blah. We had a lot of good comments about our last podcast, the Roundtable podcast, and I'd like to thank Peter for getting that all put together. He, in fact, got Dave Yates and Chess Griffin to get on the show. Thanks again to the guests, Jason, Dave, and Chess. It was a lot of fun, as Chess put it, talking Linux. But most of the feedback was very good, getting a lot of feedback just like Tim's here. He left a comment on our blog. Tim said, great show. It was a good idea to pull guys in from other podcasts. Then he asks, when are the Linux Podcast Awards this year anyway? This should be one of the best roundtable nominees. Thanks for putting this together. And thanks, Tim, for that vote of confidence. Future roundtables are going to be even better as we work out the kinks and that kind of thing. That was the first time for me. Future roundtables will be hopefully much, much better. And look forward to that because it was just a lot of fun doing that kind of stuff, talking to other people and their experiences with Linux, with Ubuntu, and with podcasting. You know, as all the people who joined me were podcasters as well. So, really nice to talk shop. I didn't even know there was a Linux Podcast Award, but if there is and you feel like we should be nominated, it would sure help the cause here at FreshUbuntu.org, and it would be an honor if you did nominate us. I normally haven't done a lot of marketing of the blog or the podcast, other than I have the podcast and it's up and running, and I mention a thing here and there. I used to do that way back in the early days, you know, hey, you know, run over to Podcast Alley and vote for the podcast, or check us out at the Dig podcast section and give us a dig and that kind of thing. But I, you know, I didn't get a whole lot of turnout, I guess. I don't know why I stopped doing it. It was just, I just didn't feel like begging anymore, I guess. So if you like the show and you would like to do something, send us an email. I think that is a much bigger stroke to my ego, would be hearing from my listeners rather than going to whatever site and voting for us, which is also nice too. And you can do that, and please feel free. I'm not stopping anyone from doing that at all. And I know Peter is just kind of cringing when I'm saying this stuff, but my thing is I like to hear from my listeners much more. So if you have left a comment or emailed me, I thank you very much for leaving me a comment or an email or even a voicemail. I know a few of you have, and I'm going to post some, I guess some, formatting rules about sending me a voicemail through email. And I'll post that in the next blog entry that I have in the next podcast, show notes. But essentially I like to get it all in a 24-bit format at 22050 sampling rate, and or I may have that backwards, but in any case, I'll have it all written down on the podcast. No more than 3 to 5 minutes long. It's you know, both Peter and I have short attention spans, so we what you say at the beginning of the of your voicemail may not be remembered by the time it gets to the end of the voicemail. So well, anyway, we really like hearing that because it's kind of a neat little interaction. We get to hear your voice for once. It's just kind of cool how technology is. One of these days, I understand that TalkShoe doesn't have a Linux client, and I wish they did, but maybe in the near future when they do, I'd like to get a live podcast going with a bunch of listeners all at one time. That would be really cool, too. So, anywho, I've been ranting long enough, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you for joining me and Peter at the Fresh Ubuntu podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we have. And we will talk to you again very shortly. Coming up next week is another guest, Scott, who was the former host of the Mac New podcast, which is now no longer running, but he is going to be on the show, and we are going to talk about Gutsy Gibbon and OS X. So if you are at all dual booting OS X and Ubuntu, this might be something of interest to you. And until then, we hope you have a very nice week and a very nice, joyful and thankful Thanksgiving weekend. Bye-bye.